Astronomers have argued for years about the existence of another planet in our solar system. But now they're beginning to say there could be many, many planets. A long time ago, Nancy Leader talked with us about Planet X, and she'll be back in a moment. She hasn't been with me for about 5 years, so I'm looking forward to chatting with her. Nancy Leader, Zeta Talk, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, those of you who have listened to our program for years, you know the name Nancy Leader. Those of you who are brand new, well, you might not. Nancy Leader is a lifelong contactee, communicates with the Zetas. She left a career in California, went to her family farm in Wisconsin to be an example of how people should prepare for the upcoming Earth changes as predicted by the Zetas, whom she channels, by the way. Plate movements, volcanoes, tsunamis, and boy, have we had a few of those, which she believes are caused by Planet X. Welcome back, Nancy Leader. This is quite a night, Nancy. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, George, I'm so primed. I've got so many. I worked up a talking points page, and it includes the increased visibility of Nibiru / Planet X, because, of course, it goes by many names. The Earth wobble, the daily Earth wobble, and how it's becoming worse and more immeasurable. Electromagnetic pulse and methane light towers, electromagnetic pulse such as what happened at Hoboken recently, aftertime land grabs and why Facebook had a smackdown over their attempt to get over Africa and dominate it, the multi-pronged approach to admitting that Nibiru is in our inner solar system, and conscious contact is on the increase.
And we've got that link for you that you sent us. It's already set up at coasttocoastam.com.
Yes, it is. I highly recommend, because I've got all these photos and images. Right. Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you and thank you. And let me tell you why. I first interviewed you when I came in to host Coast to Coast full-time 2003. And we channeled the Zetas. Do you still do that, by the way?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We can do that tonight.
We'll do that tonight.
You know, yeah, it's really a telepathic contact. They put some of their DNA in my brain in the telepathy center so that I get their concepts. I don't hear a voice. I get their concepts, and I wrap English around it.
All right. Well, you were one of the first then, and even a little further back, to talk about Nibiru, this other planet. Of course, Zachariah Sitchin did that, but you were the one who was very specific, and others started following your lead. And you took a lot of heat for this, Nancy, over the years, you know, from people saying, well, where is it? It's not here. Now astronomers are beginning to say that there's something in our solar system, folks. There's something out there. They're finding other planets in our solar system, but I think they're beginning to realize now that the big one really is there. And I just wanted you to know that for, you know, everything you took over the years, you ought to be commended for sticking to it, because you've been vindicated as far as I'm concerned.
It helps when you know you're right. So, yes, indeed, and it gets better than that. You know, Planet Nine, it's all started in January, latter part of January, with Planet Nine. Oh, out there past Orion, there's some sort of a tug thing. Well, guess where the aphelion of Planet Nine is? Right at the lower part of Orion's bow. If you look at the path diagram, which, by the way, is on that Talking Points page, go link to it, folks, that's exactly where the Zetas said that in 1983, the infrared team found an object out there. And they said, oh, we don't know if it's inbound or not, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, identical, right? So that's how accurate the Zetas are. They put the path up where people should look, and we did. We had teams going out 2001, 2003. And they found it, you know, they took the star charts, they did CCD images, they did infrared, you know, they went to observatories, and they tracked it according to the Zeta's coordinates. This was, you know, in 2001 to 2003, and then in the spring of 2003. It was close enough that people took photos of it coming inbound, crossed the Earth's orbit, and went closer to the sun, preparing to pass the sun, and at that point got lost in the glare, and things changed, became more difficult to see. People saw brilliant double sunrises and double sunsets on occasion. You know, if they used filters that filtered only for red spectrum light, they could see the complex, but, you know, it was tricky. You have to take the insert from a floppy disk, you know, and they sometimes saw the moon swirls, which are like long tubes. This passing planet, Nibiru, is about four times larger than Earth, 23 times as massive, and it has multiple moons, at least two dozen, that trail behind it, and they form long tubes because they get in a dance with each other, and that the sunlight ricochets down that tube and comes out like a flashlight pointing toward Earth. And on occasion, people say, oh, bright orbs, you know, around the sun. And even so bright, they would pull over on the highway and try to take pictures. But other than that, it was hard to see because it's so shrouded in red dust.
Right.
Now we have the multi-pronged approach. The first thing that happened is Planet Nine. And then in it's coming, and oh, there was... Now, characteristic of this whole year is various astronomers are popping up with stuff. They act like bumbling idiots. Oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Why couldn't we see it before? Well, the Hubble, the WISE, you know, and star chart mapping, except Kepler probes, they're looking way far out. And it was right under our feet.
It was right there.
Then they switched to the Dark Energy Survey, which is infrared, run out of Chile by the ESO, and they see things close in. You know, in 2010, they found several exoplanets closer to the solar system than these other far out, you know, guys like WISE. Oh, okay, that explains it. You know, then we had the retrograde issue, because if you look at the Zeta Talk chart issued in 1997, Nibiru goes into a retrograde orbit as it gets closer in. They said, well, now we have Nikku. Oh, guess what? There's this little rock thing, trans-Neptune, you know, and it's in a retrograde orbit, and it's in the inner solar system. Then they have the business about, the Zeta said, way out there is a dead binary sun of the of our star, our sun, and, you know, and that's included because Lund University came up with saying, well, maybe Planet Nine is in this weird orbit because another sun stole it from our solar system.
Hmm.
So now we've got the binaries under discussion. It's all coming out. We are poised at this point to say that Nibiru is parked next to the sun, just where the Zeta said it would be, and they're going to find it on the Dark Energy Survey, which they're going over the older charts, saying, wait a minute, there's an exoplanet, 2003, oh, right next to the sun. You know, and we're ready for that, it could happen today.
Why the shroud of secrecy, Nancy? Why does that continue?
Well, Reagan, according to the Zetas, Reagan in way back when, time of, 1981, in 1983, actually, they said, issued some executive orders saying, we've discovered, you know, that Nibiru really exists and it's close enough that it's inbound, right? Don't anybody talk about that. People will panic. They'll stop paying their mortgage. They'll move away from the coastline. The houses will be thrown back on the banks. There'll be chaos and rioting and insanity. They can't handle it. We can handle the truth, but they can't, right? So he issued this executive order saying it's hush hush, and plenty of astronomers lost their lives trying to get the truth out, including Harrington, he was a naval astronomer. He went to New Zealand. He said, I'm going to look for it. I'm going to tell the public, and boop, he was dead. So, and in addition, Reagan wrote an executive order, don't talk about the alien presence. Don't tell people. They can't handle it. We can handle it, but they can't. Well, now there's so many contactees. According to the Zetas, over half of mankind has given the call and is chatting with aliens, and they know the truth down deep in their subconscious. They know the truth. So what the aliens have done is rather than force an admission, they've gone bottom up and talked directly to the people. Now, Obama wanted to tell people in 2012, we went through this, so many assassination attempts. you know, that he wasn't supposed to, you know, that he couldn't do an Oval Office thing. He couldn't do an emergency broadcast. You know, they were blocking him right and left. So it didn't work out. And Jade Helm in 2015 was all set up that he could get on and tell the people, NIBRU exists, it's there, we're going to have a passage, you know, okay, this is what might happen, this is, we'll let you know, you know, and he chickened out. We got all the way to September of 2015, Jade Helm ended, and Dunford got disgusted and took over. And we are in a silent military coup. That's my understanding.
Nancy, to the new folks who do not know what NIBRU is, would you tell them what this is?
Yeah, it's a planet that has a very odd orbit. It actually goes past both suns, where most planets, as you're aware, go round and round and round. You know, they find a spot and they don't crash into each other. But this one, from coming out of the Big Bang, and when planets and suns and everything were just formulating, for whatever reason, it got into a sling orbit, and it goes like train tracks, the Zetas have described it. Not exactly an oval, but more like train tracks. Chuck, 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 and goes around the dead dark star, and then chuck, 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 comes back around our star, our sun, and back and forth. For us, we get a visit from this guy every 3,600 years on average. The last time was the Jewish Exodus when, Moses and the staff down to the river, and it turned blood red.
Parting the Red Sea and everything else.
Yeah. And that was the last one. The flood was three back, 10,800 years or so. And it's written in the geology of the Earth that we have this crustal shift. Hapgood wrote a book about that, and he said it's really that the crust breaks loose from the core, and on this slippery layer just under the floating Earth plates, they slide, and that accounts for ice ages, wandering poles, blah, 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 and it does. You know, so Einstein, who was a buddy with Hapgood, said, this is the best explanation I've read, right? So NIBRU is not exactly a planet and not exactly a brown dwarf. It's a weird hybrid that I'm told by astronomers they have no term to describe. The Zetas call it a smoldering brown dwarf. It's very massive, and it has more water than our planet, less land, more water, and deep, deep open rifts that show light and heat coming out, because it's got a burning process going on, but not like a sun, not hot like a sun. So it can be out there in space and have its own heat and light, and also it's the home planet of the Anunnaki, who were transplants put on that planet because it's habitable. And because it has a greater gravity draw, about 1.6 times greater than Earth, they are about 50% more big. They're 8 foot tall, they're muscular, big boned, and they were considered in the past, when they were here mining for gold, to be gods. The gods of Mount Olympus.
Like Genesis would point out.
Yeah, like David and Goliath. Goliath was an Anunnaki. The Visigoths of Germany. These were Anunnaki. A lot of history. They had assistance from aliens that would levitate big stones, which is why they could build the Great Pyramids and do all this. Cities up in the mountains in Peru and heads of Easter Island and et cetera. We have a long history with the Anunnaki. They were chased off the earth about 4,000 years ago by the Council of Worlds. And yes, we do have an administrative body in the universe, because this is a schoolhouse, Earth is, for very young souls. We're supposed to be able to ponder whether we want to be, generous and caring and practice the golden rule and care about others, or stay selfish like a little baby, a hoard, greedy, demanding. 5% of souls do not evolve. They don't grow up. They stay that way and eventually get hauled off to prison planets. The other 95% grow and become and are allowed to graduate to higher densities or dimensions where they can do things like space travel, and they're more high-tech, they have longer lives, they, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a schoolhouse, and the administrative force in our part of the universe, known as the Council of Worlds, the Zetas call it the Council of Worlds, said, all right, the Anunnaki have to go and leave the Earth because they are too intimidating. You know, they treat man like slaves, which we were, you know, mining for gold and ripping hearts out of chests and, you know, whatever horrors. And it's not a balanced environment for mankind to make their spiritual decisions. So they chased the Anunnaki off by having all kinds of accidents. They kept losing their gold. Their ships would encounter big waves and sink. You know, whatever, and they did. They have mined for gold on Mars, Phobos, a moon of Mars, and elsewhere in the solar system. They're presumably sitting out there on Nibiru, closer to the sun than we are, within the orbit of Venus, but they're outbound at the current time.
Nancy, the work of Zachariah Sitchin at this point, would you say he was spot on?
Not about everything. He took whatever he translated literally. And according to the Zetas, the Anunnaki, who, by the way, they're not gods. They're not a higher level entity, you know, like... most of our visitors are. They're peers of mankind. They're like another race of man. And they got to bragging. They bragged that they had genetically engineered man. The Zetas said, oh, no, they're just bragging. You know, and so therefore, not everything that Sitchin wrote, but mostly correct. You know, they, the ancient Sumerians knew about Nibiru. They were in contact with the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki knew about our outer planets, such as Pluto, and we didn't, our modern man didn't know until 1930 that Pluto existed. So all of this is taken as evidence that the ancient Sumerians were indeed talking to the Anunnaki. Then you have things like, figures, you know, the hieroglyphs high up in the Andes and showing landing strips. This is how spaceships were to be able to land. Ancient maps that show an outline of Antarctica not iced over as it is today. There's so much evidence, you know, that the Anunnaki were here, sometimes took man up in the space, you know, for a look-see, and that we do have crustal shifts.
Wow, that's just amazing that it is so close. And the inhabitants of Nibiru, are they, would you call them friendly at this point?
They're just another race of man. They have good guys and bad guys as we do. I think they are considered to be fairly structured. They're not a relaxed, loose society. They have a lot of rules. They're a little more prone that way than mankind. Although there's probably, you go to North Korea, probably very rule-oriented. And we're not going to encounter them. That's what the Zetas have said. They are not going to be allowed to come back. There's a lot of talk. A lot of people say, oh, the Anunnaki are going to return. That's not true. It won't be allowed. The Council of Worlds is phenomenally powerful. You cannot resist their decisions or their edicts. You know, they have, I mean, it's not like the normal police where if you can figure out, you know, whether they're tapping your line or you know, you can get around it.
Hold on for a second, Nance. We're at the break, but we're coming back for more. Nancy Leader on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Nancy Leader with us. Of course, we're talking about Nibiru, and it's there. It's coming. But, Nancy, we were talking about the inhabitants of that planet, and we really shouldn't be concerned about them. Stephen Hawking, the physicist, though, is warning all of us to be very careful about sending out information into space because he's afraid who might capture it and come back. Are you concerned about that?
Oh, heavens, no. You know, we've been visited by aliens for how many, forever. And up until the time of Roswell, approximately, it was conscious contact. You know, the Vedas have people describe, the book of from India have people describing what they saw, the weird aliens, and they were able to chit-chat, you know. In the Bible, where we have angels, you know, up floating up, and they seem to have a halo on, according to the Vedas, that was humans being drawn up, teleported up to spaceships. And the reason, what's the halo? Well, nobody washed their hair in those days, and when the sun shines off greasy hair, that's what it looked like. So for a long time, you know, we've been, and all this stuff about sending something out in space, well, they've been capturing that all along, and there are rules about contact. Humans are in control. This is the deal. It's like we're in the playground at school, kindergarten, and they can hover around the outside of the fence and say, little boy, come over here, that type of thing. But if a human gives what's called the call, they desire counseling. They want, sometimes it can be curiosity or prayer or a Ouija board or, you know, just wondering, and you've given the call. And depending on the nature of your call, you know, if you're really selfish and you wish somebody harm or whatever, the bad guys come down and talk to you, like the little devil on your shoulder. And if you want to help other people, the good guys come down, and the little angel on the other shoulder. And it's psychological and it's counseling. Nothing we do in sending out in space is going to influence anything. And don't listen to Stephen Hawking. I don't think he's ever met an alien in his life. He's chicken. Just because you have a high IQ does not mean you have backbone.
No, that is absolutely true. Let's talk a little bit about the Earth's wobble and what's the significance of that.
In 2004, after Nibiru arrived in 2003, it pushes, it's basically the way it's swinging past the sun. It's not straight up and down like our other planets, Mercury and Earth and the sun, you know, with the North Pole up, South Pole down. It's kind of sideways and pointing its North Pole outbound toward the Earth. Well, when it does that, guess what part of the Earth gets a good shove? Our magnetic and geographic poles do not line up. The magnetic is offset a little bit. You know, South Pole was over there by Tasmania, and the North Pole was up there in the Arctic somewhere, but now it's more like over Siberia. And when it comes around to where the crust side of the North Pole is apparent and vulnerable, it gets a shove from the North Pole of Nibiru. Magnets, North Poles of magnets, do not like to touch, as anybody knows. You can't even get them. I don't care how strong you are. You try to get them to snap together, they do not. So we get a shove. And then there is a reverberating. It goes kind of around like a figure eight. If you were way up in space and looked down, you would see a figure eight being formed by the North Pole. It swings over to the, you know, this way and then that way, and then it bounces back, and then, whoops, time for another shove. This happens daily. It's called a polar push when Nibiru is noon over the Pacific, etc. This is visible. You can see this. I recently got some email from people saying, guess what? I can see Nibiru in a webcam up in Alaska. And I went up there, and it was very puzzling because it's Selawik, which is like near Fairbanks, very clear skies. This is an airplane weather cam showing in all directions. But it was the cam looking north. I said, what? And it was at midnight. Then I realized what was going on. You are not supposed to be able to see the sun at midnight up there. It's supposed to be below the horizon. But because of the tilt of the earth during the wobble, there was the sun rising at midnight and setting again. Then, of course, come morning, it rises again in the east. But this is an example of the wobble. Another example is the Hyperes. This is a French site that whatever it is, that shows coordinates. It's an Earth Orientation Center website, and it shows where the North Pole is pointing out in space. Normally, because we're not exactly aligned, magnetic and geographic, there's a little bit of an offset, kind of a circle. That circle has been getting wider and wider and wider since 2013 till the present. So this is documented proof that we are leaning, you know, to one side or the other. Another one is the jet stream. I have some examples on my Talking Points page, you know, where normally over the North American continent, it swoops down like a V, comes in at Seattle, goes down toward Houston, goes up toward New England, and out. And living in Wisconsin, I used to joke that we get polar weather here because, in fact, that's the way the jet stream was pushing the air. And then it went loop-de-loop. You know, starting in 2005, etc., it was, vertical in the middle of the continent. It's all over the place. And recently, in 2016, there was a panic a couple months ago, and the news was saying, oh, the jet stream has crossed the equator. We're in trouble. Horrible things are going to happen. They called it a global emergency because, you know, this mapping from the satellites of where the jet stream swirls are was showing it went from the northern hemisphere down below to the southern and back. And they said, oh, what does this mean? It means the wobble is getting worse.
If it gets any worse, then what happens?
You can have, when we go into the last weeks, which the Zetas have said, run for 7.3 weeks, and thus the pole shift would never take mankind by surprise. But you can get a lot of flopping around. You know, currently, you can measure where it is by seeing where the sunrise is and the sunset is, you know, what the time of dawn and sunset is. You can do this, you know, if yourself, and people are doing this, and they say, boy, the sun never rose there before. That type is way too far north or way too far south, and that kind of thing. But if you get into a severe wobble, a lot of sloshing in the ocean happens. The severe wobble would be flopping to the left and right and left and right, flopping back away, you know, where the North Pole points away, like almost into 3 days of darkness, but very temporary, and the like. The water doesn't go with the land, and you can get wobble sloshing. Now, during the pole shift, the Zetas have predicted, which is going to be a 90-degree pole crustal shift. In other words, the North Pole will flop over to be where the equator is, and so will the current South Pole. And, you know, that far, they predicted 500-foot tides, 600 where there was tidal bore because of high land and the like. But for severe wobbles, they have said 200 and 300 feet. Now, that's enough.
Jeez, that's enough to wipe out east and west coasts.
A lot of places. You go around the world to the cities that would be affected. It's not just, you know, Miami, New York City, L.A., it's Hong Kong, Sydney, Australia, London, Paris, you know, Buenos Aires. You go everywhere would be affected. So this may happen. We're overdue for this kind of stuff. The administrative force in the universe wanted mankind to be aware of what's coming. They will not stop the pole shift. People say, well, why won't they just stop it? Well, they don't stop starvation, you know, lightning, tornadoes, pedophilia. They don't stop this stuff now. It's part of, this is our schoolhouse. We're supposed to rise to the occasion and help others. And if you don't have challenges, you don't have spiritual growth. If everybody's beautiful and they are disease-free, they have straight teeth, no genetic illness, you know, diseases, and they're rescued all the time, what do you think you're going to have? A bunch of pampered, you know, you don't have spiritual growth.
Right.
You have to have tribulation so people have opportunity to be heroes, to rise to the occasion, or run away. You know, so therefore, they're not going to stop the pole shift. But they have put the brakes on to give Obama a chance to inform the world, because everybody in the world is waiting and saying, well, you know, if we come out and say Nibiru exists, the U.S. is going to say, oh, no, no, no. So you have to have Obama say, it's Reagan's executive order, blah, blah. And he didn't get his backbone up last September of 2015. And therefore, now we're into the multi-pronged approach with the dark energy survey and all that. You know, and so we are going to learn about it possibly by the end of this year, I would guess. So in the meantime, you know, the brakes were put on to slow down the plate movement, which were described as the 7 of 10 plate movements, sinking of the Sunda plate, tipping left into the Pacific of the South American plate, which has been gradually going on, tipping right of the African plate, which has been gradually going on, and the New Madrid adjustment, which we're really ready for and could happen anytime. So the brakes have been lifted a little bit, you know, and we may have a severe wobble depending on what the Council of Worlds decides. And I got to tell you, I'm not in the loop on that.
Nancy, you've talked about EMPs, of course. We talk a lot about it on this program, electromagnetic pulse, yes. You know, from an atomic weapon detonated in the atmosphere or the sun. Is there a concern with Nibiru and the EMPs?
Big time, big time. We've been having EMP bringing down big planes. Air France 447 in 2009 was probably the first of note. MH370 was another. It became, you know, everybody, all the electronics gets walloped. It's a pulse, and it either it's a surge or a brownout. Either one destroys electronics. And then it became a ghost ship with everybody lacking oxygen and flew by automatic pilot out into the Indian Ocean. We've had others. German wings flew into the Alps because of that. That time, CERN was also having some problems with their electronics, you know, and they just get, and there was another one that went down in Egypt. It was an MS-84 or something. Anyway, that plane was flying right along the plate border of Africa, African plate, and went down, and you never hear the results unless they want to demonize the pilot. Oh, he was suicidal, you know, or something like that. Well, a lot of electric plane trains on the East Coast, the most recent, Hoboken. Now, just look at it. When I saw the map of where Hoboken was, you know, it's a terminal where these electric trains come in. They all line up like, I don't know, 10 of them side by side, you know, and all the wires, you know, because these are electric trains, and they come in, and they have to have, it's not just one set of wires down the track, sitting right on the water of the river. You know, there it is, practically stuck out into the water. Well, you know what they say about electricity and water. Electricity, lightning loves water. They tell you, don't be in a boat out in the pond when it's a lightning storm, because whoops, you know. And they say, don't get in a shower, because the water in the pipes is an attractant, and you may find yourself electrocuted while you're showering. Well, electromagnetic pulse, according to this, it's not visible like the crackling of a lightning with light, but it has a similar behavior in that it's an arc that has a path, and it wants to ground, and it's not like disseminated over a wide area. It's a very directed, zoop, now I'm down. So it likes the electronics of planes. It likes, you know, and particularly when you take planes over water, that may have, you know, rock stress underneath. It's the edge of a plate or that, you know, something's being, it was MH370, the Sonda plate was being squeezed and pushed down and losing elevation at that time. Well, when you squeeze rock, it's an attractant for electrical passage because the air in the rock gets squeezed out and all the water in the rock is continuous. So therefore, What the Zetas say, it's an electronic screech in the rock. And this is what drives pets crazy when they hear the screech and they want to leave home. That means your rock under you is under stress. You could have an earthquake. And it also is what causes a static in the radio. If you listen to your AM/FM radio,
you
hear a lot of static, that's the screech coming from the rock. And watch out, because you may have an earthquake.
Nancy, next hour when we take calls with you, tell me how you would want to format this. People want to talk to you. People may want to talk to the Zetas. Can you go in and out, how do you want to work that?
Yes, we can go in and out, absolutely. They should just specify, and I'll give it to the Zetas. It's different than Nancy talk, and I will say, okay, this is Zeta talk, and now they're done, you know, end of Zeta talk.
And subject matter?
It doesn't matter, anything, wide open. If they don't ask any personal questions if you don't want to know the answer.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. Let's talk also about what you call the conscious contact. What is that?
Well, actually, I'm bringing that up because of the little blue alien in Peru, which you featured on the coast, and it was absolutely charming and undeniable. Four different videos. Then we had witnesses, all kinds of witnesses, including police, and they had the little guy was walking, and then he floated when somebody went toward him, and then he went out into traffic on the highway and seemed to be mowed over by a truck and popped out on the other side. In other words, he did dimension shifting to escape the truck. He could float himself up, which aliens can do, not mankind, but when you graduate up there, you can, and showing off all these real alien thingies, you know. So I did a study, I did a newsletter feature on this, where I've tracked, and you go back into, you know, okay, they had drawings, or, you know, we had the Skinny Bob video in 2011, 17 seconds of what was supposedly released during Roswell, looked like a real alien. And then we have photo shots, you know, the guy, the peeping Tom out west. Then we got into photo shoots, you know, increasing shots of little aliens, better and better visibility. Then this is a video. So it's a transition to where we're being accustomed to the idea of just seeing them. And I joke and I say, expect ET for dinner. I'm serious. We're going to go there. As times get tough and we have all this wobble sloshing and big earthquakes and you know, volcanoes increasing, and you know, what we're going to find is that we get an offer of help from some weird-looking guys that turn out to be aliens, and they may not be hominoid either. And the Zetas say, when you're under stress like that, you know, you can absorb something really bizarre, because you're saying to yourself, my gosh, what else can happen? And you don't think much of it. You know, where in a normal day-to-day, you would. So we are going to become galactic citizens and have conscious contact, depending on readiness. In other words, if it's going to make you terribly anxious, they're not going to do that.
All right, Nancy, stay with us. We're going to come back. We'll take phone calls. We'll chat a little bit more. Nancy will channel the Zetas, or you can talk directly to her.